And it is my great pleasure to welcome, for the first time, as a speaker here at Many Rivers, Kayleen Asbo, cultural historian, musician, writer, and teacher. She will be speaking about myth and transformation, the labyrinth as a mirror of self and the world. She holds 3 master's degrees in psychology, mythological studies, and in music, is currently a PhD candidate at the Pacifica Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara, is on the faculties of Sonoma State University, the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, and Dominican University's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And I could go on. There are so many credits she has, but I won't, because here she is, ready to talk to you about myth and transformation. Thank you so much for coming to Many Rivers.
So before I begin tonight with this discussion of this incredible pattern that we're going to talk about, this is the actual stone floor labyrinth at Chartres Cathedral that was placed in there 800 years ago. And before we get to this actual pattern, I'm curious, how many of you have actually walked a labyrinth before?
Oh, okay, so we'll skip over the beginning.
There's so much that can be said about this. I'm curious, have any of you been to Chartres in France? I always feel like I'm meeting kindred spirits, you know, it's like a family reunion. To have done that is one of those great initiations, I think, in life. Well, I think then what I would like to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about the general theme of the labyrinth and the way that it can be both a mirror and a pivot point in life, a particularly useful tool when faced with blockages and with decision-making, and how it's used currently in many different settings. And then I'm going to leave some time for questions, because I know that those of you who are here then, having had your own labyrinth experiences, maybe perhaps incubating in you for quite some time, might want to have a time to share and process that. So we'll have some time with that. And then I also want to say that tonight is really a prelude to a month-long series that I'll be doing in Petaluma that's part of something called The Art of Soul. And in this month-long series, we'll begin tomorrow night with a candlelit labyrinth walk in the sanctuary, in the parish hall there at St. John's, with chanting from a place called Taizé in France. Some of you might know that as well, accompanied by piano and cello. And then the remaining Fridays throughout the month of January, we'll explore different aspects of this. So this is a sample platter tonight. Next week, next Friday, we'll be looking at the Greek myth of the labyrinth with Theseus and the Minotaur, and how that influenced the artist Picasso, and how he took that image of Minotaur as a mirror for his own struggles of development and painted it over and over and over and over again. I have fantastic slides of this to see the transformation as he worked with this mythic image. And then the second week of the lecture series is going to focus on Ariadne, the Cretan princess, mistress of the labyrinth, and the influence of her myth and stories with the rites and rituals that were passed down, particularly about Epiphany and Dionysus, and are shown so beautifully in the frescoes of Pompeii, at the women's initiation chambers there. Then the final week of the series, we'll be looking at the myth and at Chartres Cathedral and the building of the labyrinth at Chartres Cathedral and the role that that's played as a symbol of pilgrimage. So those will be up here for later. Just to know that tonight we can only touch on a few of the many, many myths and many, many stories of this incredibly potent transformative tool. The labyrinth came into my life, well, I think it really came into my life 12 years ago, and I'd like to start with the story of my first 2 labyrinth walks, because I like to say that my first labyrinth walk really took 4 years to finish. And those of you for whom this is a new tool, I'll explain just a little bit about this. Unlike a maze, a labyrinth has no dead ends. It is one single path that winds its way over the different configurations, in this particular case of a circle, although there are square labyrinths as well. And after following that one path, you eventually arrive in the center. and then you usually walk your way out the same way you came, although there are other ways to do that. And labyrinths have been found in all cultures throughout the world, ancient tool. So we have them, in fact, from Crete. We have them carved into rock in Scandinavia, ancient rock carvings of labyrinths. They've been found deep inside caves. We found them in cultures all over the world. A southwestern expression of that might be the man in the maze in the woven basket. So they are, in fact, one of these things that Carl Jung called an archetypal pattern. And I like to think of an archetype as being the DNA of human imagination. So something that we all share that manifests in different ways, and the labyrinth is one that's a universal pattern underneath these many different expressions. The Chartres labyrinth came to prominence in right between the years 1200 and 1209, so 800 years. And this particular pattern has been thought to be, by many people, perhaps the most powerful and symbolic, because every little thing about this pattern has a symbology. Every little petal, every little one of these tiny things has a history, a story, a symbology behind it, which is why I'll spend a whole evening on that at the end of the month. But this is the pattern that I first walked at Grace Cathedral. How many have you been there? Several of you? If you haven't, it's an incredible place to go. And it's probably the closest that you can get to having the experience of Chartres without buying a plane ticket to France. Because the building itself is modeled after Notre Dame Cathedral, so in a Gothic style. And it's a few feet different. I think it's 39 feet in diameter at Grace and it's 42 at Chartres. But basically the same. And now, it used to be a tapestry labyrinth when I first walked it, but now, thanks to a very generous donor, it's been put in the marble and it's glorious. And it's open for labyrinth walks. You can drop in, but they also have regular Friday noonday peace walks. And then on the second Friday of every month, there's a labyrinth walk with live music. So if you haven't been there, I really encourage you to do that. My first experience was this pattern then, when it was a tapestry labyrinth at Grace Cathedral. And a friend had told me, oh, we have this great thing. And I had pictured, maybe some of you have had this experience, I was expecting that there were walls, that it was going to be like a hedge, you know, and a maze, the kind of images that we've seen. And to be honest, I was a little disappointed that it was just a flat surface, because I was expecting this, I don't know, sort of mythic experience that I had had from seeing things as a child, you know, that I wanted that experience. So I walked this. And I hadn't had any instructions, and it wasn't part of a ceremony or a ritual. It was just there, and so I blundered in and walked it one morning. And I think I was right around here. I was thinking, oh, I'm almost to the center.
No.
And then I came around again, and I thought, oh, now I'm almost there. And finally, I was right over here, and I thought, am I ever going to finish this? And I was getting so frustrated that I almost felt like I was going to walk off, because it just was driving me crazy. And then I finally, of course, got there just when I was about ready to give up. And I came away, and I didn't have a great big experience. Now, some of you might have had great big experiences the first time you walked it. And some of you who haven't walked it yet, when you first walk the labyrinth, you might have heard people say, oh, I had what Lauren Archer calls, I had a Shazam. I had a bolt out of the blue, and I had an epiphany, and I knew what I was going to do with my life, and I had clarity, and oh, everything was clear. That was not the experience that I had. I was frustrated, and I was annoyed. And I didn't have anything that I thought I learned at all from it. And I walked away, and I was like, well, that's not for me, you know. And then 4 years after that, I had my own spiritual awakening. and I arrived at Grace Cathedral, and it was still dark. I thought that the cathedrals would be open at all hours, like some of them are in Europe, so I went to go early, and the cathedral was locked, so I decided to walk the outside path. And this time, as I walked the outside path, which is beautiful also, it's set in this little area that overlooks a park at Nob Hill, I stopped at each turn. And on one side, I saw the sliver of a winter moon hanging in the sky. And I walked a little bit, and I saw these lovely women who were practicing Qigong in the park. There's this community of Chinese women. And I went, oh, that's so beautiful, watching them hold these poses. And I turned around again, and I saw a star and the faintest glimmer of pink in the horizon coming over the East Bay. And I turned again, and I saw a gargoyle that I'd never noticed outside of Grace Cathedral. And when I got to the center, I said, oh, this is why it takes so long. Because it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And so that was my big aha, but it took 4 years for me to start and finish my first labyrinth walk. And what many people find then, that is that sometimes when you walk this pattern, that there are things that are revealed about your life and about the world and about the life of spirit that often take quite some time to incubate. And it may take years, like a good dream. How many of you have had good dreams that you've been working on for a decade? Or at least a couple years? Yeah. There are some of those things that are like that. And the labyrinth can be like a dream, a mirror image of the interior life. And this pattern is certainly one of the most profound ways, I think, to access those depths of the psyche, is by entering into this. Now, one of the ways that it was taught in the Middle Ages to use this was as an outer manifestation of an inner intention for pilgrimage. And originally, this particular pattern was placed in Chartres Cathedral during the Crusades, in a time of enormous danger and war and strife. And one of the things that I love about this is that as they placed it in the body of the cathedral, it was placed at the site that's associated with the womb. So as a symbol of birth and rebirth. And the builders of this particular pattern, before they could lay a stone or pick up a hammer, they actually had to pledge themselves to a path of peace. And the first step that they had to do was to take a fearless moral inventory and find out if there was anyone that they needed to make peace with and do that before they built it. So I love that story, that myth. Probably true, and I certainly want it to be true. And there's good suggestion that it is, that this was built originally during a time like our own, when the world was being torn apart by different conflicts of religion and values. And that this then, as a pathway of peace, symbolizes the fact that it is one journey, and that we are all on one walk. And that it's lovely to walk it by yourself, but there's also another mirror that when you walk it with other people, you get to have the mirror of, now what do I do? Here's somebody in my path. Here's someone in my way. How can I take that as a metaphor for my own journey of where I am, as a reflection for where I am in this moment in my life? So one way that it was used was then as a symbolic act of pilgrimage, that people, if they were carrying inside of themselves a sense of having a burden, an interior burden, you know, in the Christian language, beset by sin, feeling the weight of the world, if you want to use more modern terminology with that, or just weighed down by things in life, whether it's a sense of guilt or fear or anxiety. To walk this could then be an intentional act of releasing. And later centuries, people began to use Teresa of Avila's threefold pathway of spiritual development, of releasing and receiving and returning, which she corresponds to purgation, and illumination and integration. So those are some ways to walk it, which can in fact be very, very helpful. So for some people then, to take a symbol as they enter into the journey can be very helpful. Oftentimes when I lead rituals, I give people stones to hold and to carry that and to put their cares, fears, anxieties, and prayers into that, and then to leave it in a basin of water, of releasing into an elemental force there. And I've done labyrinth walks where people take feathers when they're in the center as an intention of living into a sense of lightness. So walking it in pilgrimage is certainly one way to do this as an act. And then walking it in community is a mirror for how you relate to other people. And sometimes those mirrors can be really funny and interesting. When we do Viriditas's labyrinth training, I'm a master teacher for that, for Grace Cathedral, and one reason I go repeatedly to Chart is to introduce people to this work and to train them into bringing it to others. And Lauren Artress, who really was the founder of this modern-day labyrinth movement, and who built the first labyrinth in I think, 500 years at Grace, she likes to say there's no right way or wrong way to walk a labyrinth. But then she also likes to confess about the challenging ways that she's encountered. And so there certainly have been challenging ways. In the medieval times, people used to sometimes crawl the labyrinth. And the first time that I saw somebody crawling the labyrinth, it was a wonderful mirror for me about, like, is there a right way or wrong way? And when they crawled it backwards like a crab, then I really had something that I got to work with inside of myself of letting go and acceptance, and then realizing the beauty of each person on the path. I have to say, nowadays, my favorite way to walk a labyrinth is often not to walk it, but to watch other people on it. It is so beautiful to see. I like to call it the divine choreographer at work. And you can see this ebb and flow of bodies, and oh, it's extraordinary. I mean, to see that is just one, I think sometimes is one of the most beautiful things, beautiful dances I've ever seen. And in fact, in the Middle Ages, it was danced, particularly for Easter at Chartres Cathedral. This is one of the stories that I love, that the community would hold hands, and there was a processional dance that people would do. And isn't this symbolic? It would be two steps forward, one step back. And I feel like that's spiritual practice right there, right? Is that we take our steps forward and steps back. And sometimes the step that we think is a forward step is really a backward step. Right? And they would hold hands, and the bishop would lead the procession into the center. And they would sing this one song that had a certain number of refrains. And the myth that I love about this is you knew that it was going to be a good karma year if the bishop stepped foot in the center at the very last song of the stanza. But that always makes me laugh because I imagine them getting to the end and going, uh-oh, and then really running. And then he would have a golden ball that he would throw. And the golden ball is something that actually harkens back to the story of Ariadne and her golden thread. So they kept that connection there in a way that I think is really interesting, that at one time they would have people surrounded with torches, torchbearers, and then the throwing of the golden ball, and then the dance. So those are just some of the really intriguing mysteries behind how this has been used throughout the centuries. One story about how I've used it this past year is if you think of this as a symbol and a metaphor for your life, and that you take your journey in here, and this might be home base, yeah. Returning to the center, returning to the origin of things. Because doesn't it look like a womb? I mean, inside, can't you imagine? I love the way that this has been sometimes described as God's fingerprint. I think that's a lovely way to think of that, the fingerprint of the holy. But also particularly because of its placement at Chartres Cathedral, for many people, when they get to the center, it has this womb-like embrace inside of it. And it often feels when you come out as if you are being born again. If you have had that experience, like you're entering out. So to see this as a map of a whole human life can be really quite an extraordinary thing. And this summer I facilitated a labyrinth walk for a group of women at Westerbeck Ranch. They had gone to high school, and they have had 50 high school reunions together. 50, can you imagine? Oh, I was so envious to have a community of people that you'd shared that much of your life with. And they had just lost their first classmate from this tight-knit circle of women. And they decided that they would this year have a labyrinth walk. And it was so beautiful because I could see in the faces of the women that they were holding the sense of the presence of the one who had departed while they walked it. And that they were so mindful of this pathway being a mirror of their life and thinking about each twist and turn. Oh, it was this decade. Oh, this was my next decade. Oh, this was when I was 30. And they would stop and they would look and they would stop and look at each other and gaze across from at the left. Oh, I had tears in my eyes, as did everybody who was walking it then. I was so acutely aware then that we can use this to think about those twists and turns in our life. And when we come to these pivot points here, one way that I've encouraged some of my Sonoma State students to walk it is to think about when they felt their life have a turn for towards the difficult. You know, when to identify before you walk, when have been the moments in your life where you felt things were falling apart? You know, or to use an alchemical term, was a negredo place, a real place of darkness and blackness. And to think of that as you turn one way, and then when you come to the next turn to think, and when did my life shift to be filled with light and hope and new possibility? And to go back and forth between those two, the pain and sorrow, the joy and gratitude, the pain and sorrow, the joy and gratitude. And that can be just an utterly amazing practice to have the sense then of holding your whole life in one pattern before you. So a few things about the symbology of this particular labyrinth, because if any of you come tomorrow night, you'll be walking a copy of this. I have a canvas labyrinth that I heard somebody say that they've walked one at Incarnation before.
Yes.
That's my labyrinth.
Yeah.
We've crossed each other on the path before.
Right.
So it's a canvas labyrinth, but it is this same pattern. We bring it with lights, and each of these pieces has some symbology. But one of the things that I'll point to here is just at the center, because this is so intriguing, and I think it's right in line with what you do here at Many Rivers and some of the talks that I know are upcoming, is to think of this this center circle, which is sometimes called the petal, because it does have that look, doesn't it, of being a flower in the center. And that those petals represent the different kingdoms of the world. So that you would have the first petal being the mineral kingdom, and then the vegetable kingdom, the plants of the world, and then the animal kingdom, and getting in touch with that part of yourself and the universe. And then the human kingdom right there, and then the angelic kingdom in this one. And this is my favorite. For those of you who don't know, can you guess what this one's called?
The divine.
The unnameable. which, of course, could be another name for the divine. But I love that, the unnameable, the unspeakable, the one where we go, the sense of wonder and awe. So one of the other many ways then to walk a labyrinth is if you're so inclined then to spend time in each of those places and see, you know, what happens if you open yourself to a sense of sympathetic vibration with each of those? You know, what comes up for you? What images occur? And the images, I think that one of the things that they've found with walking the labyrinth, that there's some interesting research on, is the effect that it has on our brains. That because we, the path, we can't predict where it's going to go, the twists and turns weave back and forth, and they weave between these four quadrants. So it has this amazing ability to regulate the mind, to calm the mind, to take all of that monkey chatter that is so difficult for so many of us. And because it's a moving exercise, an embodied experience, Lauren likes to say that this is, she knew that this was the right thing for her because she considers herself a failed meditator. That she couldn't sit still and quiet her mind, but in walking she was able to do that. And so the patterning of the brain, when they've done some EKGs on this, they've wired people up to examine this, it's really interesting how it really does tend to soothe the mind. And they've begun using it in many, many schools now, particularly with ADHD students, to great effect. One of the best labyrinth walks I've ever experienced was when I took a group of 7th and 8th graders to Grace Cathedral. And we weren't sure how it was going to go because there were, in fact, 5 boys in the class who had ADHD and who really would be hard-pressed to focus on anything. And it was extraordinary to see what happened to them as they walked in. It's not just that they were able to do it, it's that their whole faces changed. Their whole faces became so peaceful. And by the time they got to the center, they were radiant. And I'm never going to forget this moment where this group of 7th grade and 8th grade students came together and they were all standing in the different puddles and they put their hands up for each other and they just stayed in this place for the longest time. It was amazing. And at the end of the evening had happened, the music was done and they came up and they said, could we walk it again? And I was so moved at the end of the year because we did these reflections. I was teaching poetry to this particular class. And at the end of the year, they were doing class reflections on what had been the most meaningful moments of the year. And they talked about going to the ropes course and, you know, the school play. But then they said, oh, the labyrinth walk. And everybody said, yes, the labyrinth. And then everybody stayed quiet and they just went like this. And they were right back in that moment, and it was so beautiful to see. So sometimes, you know, I think we have some anxiety or trepidation of introducing teenagers to things because of the resistance, but I have to say, in terms of spiritual practices, this is the one that I've often found young people most open to. And so if you have children, grandchildren in your life, you might try it, particularly in one of those liminal spaces where there's music and candlelight. And they can, I don't think it's too strong to say that they can find that place of enchantment that they knew when they were children and is so easily lost once they get to junior high school. So that's a wonderful way to use it. For those people who are artists, many times, or writers, if you're struggling and having stumbling blocks, there's been many interviews done with people that this is another thing that allows us to have access to the right hemisphere of our brain. So anybody here one of those people where you have the judging mind jump in and start saying, oh, not good enough, you painted it wrong in this corner, oh, this sentence, you know, I can't communicate my thesis very well. So any of those kinds of moments where you reach that block where you can't find access to the ideas, or you're beset by so many of those critical voices that you feel paralyzed, that this is another amazingly effective way to deal with those sorts of things. To take whatever you're stumbling with or looking for guidance on and walking this pathway tends to have a rather extraordinary effect of quieting the judging mind and allowing images or phrases. I know poets who get, you know, whole poems. I have one friend who now carries a little a notebook and pencil in her pocket when she walks the labyrinth. She reminds me of the poet Mary Oliver, who gets her inspiration from walking around Blackwater Pond. And she told a story once when I went to hear her reading about walking and her pencil broke. And so after that, she hid them in all of the trees. So the labyrinth walk is also something that can really bring up the depths of our creativity. Wonderful tool for that. I've also known people who use it intentionally when they're at a pivot point in a relationship, when they're moving towards a commitment, or when they are needing to dissolve something. And there actually are particular patterns of labyrinths that are really interesting. I don't have images of them tonight, but where you can walk in on one pathway together and go out two separate pathways, or come from two separate pathways and go out in one. And some of those were developed in South Africa during apartheid when they were working for peace and reconciliation movements together. And they thought, well, we can't actually really put it out there, given the social constraints of what life has been under apartheid, to say that we're all walking one path doesn't feel authentic because it's been radically separate. But to say that we've come from two different paths and can now go forth together, it was created as a symbol for that, which I think is really quite lovely and beautiful and very powerful. So I think what I'd like to do now is to open up for any questions, or maybe there might be some sharing of personal experience that you want to enter into with this. Are you Leah?
Oh, I recognize you from your website. How wonderful to finally meet you. This is great.
So like, this is a long overdue crossing of paths. Very good.
Four people wrote me to say you were speaking here.
Oh, Leah designs and builds labyrinths. And so her work is absolutely gorgeous. And I've admired the pictures of it for such a long time. And she does a lot of consulting. So if you have any ideas about labyrinths that you might want on your property, she's the woman to speak to, without a doubt. Absolutely. So, questions, thoughts, comments?
Well,
yes.
That one is probably the more famous design,
yes.
But there are several.
Oh, there are so many. Right. There's the Santa Rosa Labyrinth, even, and a Snoopy Labyrinth. And during the medieval times, there were many of the cathedrals that are called Notre Dame cathedrals. We think of Notre Dame as just being the cathedral in Paris. But really, that's Notre Dame de Paris, and there's Notre Dame de Strasbourg, and there's ones at Amiens and Auxerre and all over. And there was a whole, literally a constellation of cathedrals that were dedicated to the Virgin Mary. And in many of these Notre Dame cathedrals, there was a different labyrinth. And they are extraordinary images, and you can go online and take a look at them. Some of them are octagonal or square. They are placed in stone on the floors of the cathedral. Unfortunately, many of them were ripped up during the French Revolution for many reasons. So not nearly as many survive in the Gothic cathedrals as we'd like, but there are the different patterns that are, each one's fascinating. And I've walked different patterns, and personally, I feel the way that Lauren Artress does, that this is the one that really does it for me. This is mine. But other people have other reactions to different ones. And there's the Cretan labyrinth, also known as the classical labyrinth, which really looks like a brain that has a very different pattern. And that's also very interesting. If you go to the Veritas website, and Veritas is the organization that I'm affiliated with. It began at Veritas.
Spell it.
Veriditas. It actually comes from a word that Hildegard of Bingen used, which means the greening power of God, which is a pretty great word to have for a company, especially that's dedicated to enlivening the human spirit. And on the Veritas website, there's something called the Labyrinth Locator, and you can click in and find out wherever you are in the world, be able to find labyrinths that are open to walk. and what kind of pattern they are, and there's different images that you can look at and see about those. So it's wonderful, like especially if you are you have a flight layover in some city, you know, to look it up and find them a great way to calm your mind and see if you can deal with jet lag. And so it's a fascinating thing to be able to find those. And we do have a few. There are a few land labyrinths in Sonoma County that you can look at and find that are open in different parks or church lots. And then you can also find out about regular labyrinth events, like the First Friday Teze Labyrinth that's at St. John's in Petaluma every month. So that's a wonderful resource to have to be able to find those. And certainly if you're going to go to Europe, it's a great thing, you know, better than Caesar's Trail, I think, is the Labyrinth Trail. And there are pilgrimages. And so one of the things that Veritas does is that they offer twice yearly pilgrimages to Chartres Cathedral. And I have to put in a plug for them. It's not just because I'm a facilitator there. I became a facilitator because I had such a profound experience. So I told you about my first labyrinth walk that took 4 years to finish. And later that year, I went to Chartres for the first time. And I will simply say that it was the trip of a lifetime that now I have decided I have to do it for a year. That it's such an extraordinary experience. And so, if you will, imagine being in the inside of a glorious stone Gothic cathedral. And it's after hours, and everyone has left. And you start down below in the darkness, and you hear the bells chime. They toll the way they can only chime in a Gothic cathedral made of stone, where it feels like the sound of the bell is going into the depth of the marrow of your bones. And then you see a path before you, and it's lit by 3,000 candles. And you follow this ancient pilgrim trail that is 1,000 years old, and come up into the belly of the cathedral. And the sunset light is hitting, and it's turning these stained glass windows, these blue, this incredible cobalt blue, and it feels like you're underwater. And the light is like blue fire. It leaps and it dances as it flashes on the stone column. And it's like you're in a blue flame underwater. And you hear the sounds of a medieval music performance group. The same songs that were being performed when this cathedral was being built. And you get to have this portal into walking this labyrinth in this small group of maybe 30, maybe 40 people, where the cathedral is all yours for hours. It is magic. It is absolute magic. And so that's the event that they put on every year. There's a week-long event of, I've been there when John O'Donohue, the poet, was there, watched him walk his first labyrinth. I've been there facilitating when Marion Woodman gave a week-long workshop on the stages of the feminine in human life. I've been there with Lauren Artress and Andrew Harvey. And this year I'll be there with my mentor, Christine Downing, who's written many, many books on goddesses and the feminine and Greek mythology. So if you have any hankering to go to France, that would be the week to go, to Chartres June 11th, because actually the labyrinth is going to be closed for several years while they're doing renovations, beginning in November. Mm-hmm. And it's actually unclear right now if they're going to allow it to be open. Right now, this pattern, this is where you can see it in its placement in the cathedral, as it's ringed with light. And most days of the week, it's covered with chairs. And it's only open to walk for about 4 hours on Fridays, 9 months out of the year. But it is likely, given the current political climate, which is moving towards a much more conservative climate religiously in France right now, that it won't be open for all people to walk in the near future. So if you have any... Yes.
There's a labyrinth in basketball area about 10 minutes from here. It's on person's property.
Mm.
And he asked me to do a planting. The more I think about it, I have walked this labyrinth. The more I think about it, it's more of an inner experience than what is actually out there.
Mm-hmm.
Although it could be both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on possibly like a Japanese maple or something.
Yeah, you know, there's a gorgeous labyrinth that is inspired by Zen Gardens in Burlingame at Mercy Center. And it is an absolutely exquisite. They've done it with a rock, like a rock garden, with a rock in the center, but framed by cherry trees that blossom and Japanese maples. And it's gorgeous. So that might be a place you might want to look for some inspiration. It's called Mercy Center in Burlingame.
Okay.
It's actually a Catholic retreat center that they have a place. One of the monks studies Zen Buddhism as well, and so they have ecumenical dialogues there in an east-west series, and they turned their labyrinth into this
garden.
Yeah, an outdoor garden with that. The other thing I would be inclined to that leads to mind for inspiration is to look at the symbology of different herbs in the medieval world. And Hildegard of Bingen actually wrote books on herbology, so it might be nice to look for inspiration from that. And then as an outdoor labyrinth, I would also be inclined, you know, there's something lovely when you, I've walked outdoor labyrinths where you brush against thyme and lavender, and there's something so lovely about having scents be evoked as you walk the path too, just to awaken something else.
I did think of
it. Yeah. Well, I'd love to see it when you're done with it.
Okay.
It's beautiful. You have to send me a picture.
Do you live in this area?
I live in Petaluma.
Okay.
But I'm in Sebastopol a lot. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Yes.
Directions. Is there a direction that one enters? You're setting up a maze, does it face east?
You know, there are labyrinth constructors who will build it and have very strong opinions about that, but I think that when you're building it, you also need to take into account other things. So, for example, what the site is like that you are on land, and one of the primary concerns in building labyrinths, I think, needs to be accessibility. And so sometimes Lauren talks about this in the facilitator training, we spent an afternoon on elements of building labyrinths. But she tells a story about someone who had a diehard thing about you have to be facing a particular direction. And it ended up that the entranceway, when they did that, people had to walk all the way around and almost fell off of a cliff. I think that many people would say you need to balance common sense with symbology.
Of course, that's always the case.
Yeah.
That's nice to know if there's a preferred. You mentioned turning in one direction with your students, pain and sorrow, and the other direction with joy and...
gratitude.
That's what I guessed. That was good. Thank you.
Well, I just wondered if, besides my friend here, anybody has built a labyrinth. My sister actually worked with a senior center on the East Coast, and the seniors took part in actually building it.
Mm.
That in itself was an amazing
transformative experience.
Transformative experience, and I was just curious if anyone else has built or my friend here might share.
Yes, would you?
What that's like.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a story. Dozens of stories.
You. and just to putting it out, has anyone else here built a labyrinth? It's just, for me, walking the labyrinth is an amazing, unique experience. But when you build a labyrinth, it takes you to a whole nother level. You learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about the pattern. You learn, and then the people you're building in community with. It can be a very powerful, deepening experience. And then it becomes multidimensional and not just flat upon the ground.
And I'm such a big believer in community labyrinths. you know, because the way that it really draws people, and we need these metaphors, and we need metaphors that we can actually embody.
Right.
And that
it's like takes what you said about the journey,
mm-hmm.
then the building becomes a piece of that journey.
Right. And a legacy. You know, the fact that you are doing this, and it, with luck, it'll be something that gets passed on to generation and generation. It's just, how many things can we say that about? You know, too few things in our world are gifts to those who come after.
I have a real brief little story about the magic, what you were just saying. I teach in art school,
mm-hmm.
and I was telling how I was going to come down to this, but I saw projecting pictures of labyrinths, and we're talking about the difference between a labyrinth and a maze.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got this space that I was talking with the principal about, and I said, sure, you guys can put in a labyrinth if you want. And the students were just so interested. They were just saying, yeah, let's do that. So there is something about it.
It calls.
It's just like open.
That's right.
This crack in something that I'm just touching my toe into. But
it really does. And it cuts across all, I really feel like, it, in my experience, it's cut across all religious backgrounds. It really has. It speaks to the deepest level of our human needs and longings. And particularly, it's so interesting to see people who think, like, you know how you run into these cynical teenagers, right?
Yeah.
And I love watching when I have some of these Sonoma State students who... And then they set foot in it. And I can't tell you how many times this has happened where by the time they get to the center, they are awash in tears and they say, I don't know what happened to me. I just know that something touched me to the depth of my being. And then they spend years figuring out what that is. But it really feels like a key that unlocks something that we're all yearning to touch inside of ourselves. And what meaning we make out of that to each one of us. And that's part of the beauty of it, is nobody tells you what it means, right? You get to figure that out yourself. But it really can be just a profound experience. Yes.
So you introduced me to the labyrinth at Grace about a year ago. I didn't really know what to expect, and I'd gone through a 2 or 3 year period where I'd lost a few family members, and what I found for myself was that was so profound, and it's happened ever since when I walked the labyrinth, is that I meet those that I've lost along the way, and I spend time with them. And I generally don't have extraordinary psychic experiences in my life, and I'm not sure I would describe that experience that way, but those folks seem to come to me, and I get to spend time with them, and in a way that I just feel so profoundly moved by and grateful for, that I often find myself wordless by the end. The other story, though, that I would tell is the last time that I walked was in Petaluma at St. John's on one of these first Fridays, and it's quite a beautiful setting. I helped set it up, and it's uninspiring to roll out this canvas labyrinth, but once all these little lights are placed on it and the lights are turned out, it's really a liminal kind of a space. And so I walked the labyrinth, and I walked, and I walked. And you encounter people coming the other way who go in first. And so someone has to move aside. And so I moved aside as people walked and continued my way, and I walked, and I walked, and I walked. And I was ready to get to the center. And I walked, and I walked some more, and I thought, you know, this is taking a heck of a long time. And then I found myself at the beginning. I never made it to the center.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, was an exact reflection of where I was at that night. Because I really couldn't get to my own center.
Uh-huh.
And so I reached the part in the path where I was about to turn and go to the center and walk out, and I said, screw this, and instead I turned left and I walked directly to the center, and I stood in the center, because that's really where I wanted to be, and no matter whether the path took me there or not. So there's a lot of ways to walk, as Kaylin said. I'm discovering new ones all the time.
And it is true that I think there is only one path, but people do occasionally get lost. And most of the people that I've talked to, when they get lost, it is a mirror, because they've stepped out of the way and they've tried to accommodate somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so then the question becomes, is that a mirror for anything in your life? And they go, oh my goodness, yes, I'm trying to do all these things for other people and I lose my way and I lose my connection to myself. So that sometimes that can be the most profound thing. And then one woman got lost in a different way, the opposite of Scott, where she ended up going back to the center 3 times. And what was so great about that is that each time she wanted to stay there longer, but she said, oh, that would be too self-indulgent of me, so I need to move. But then she got herself back. So that was a perfect mirror for her of part of her yearning inside of herself. She got her wish, just in a different way. Other questions or experiences? Well, I see I'm looking at the clock and I'm seeing that it's time for me to actually turn it back over, because you have a few closing words, yes?
I do. And the first one is to thank you so much for coming tonight. Rivers. I want to point out to all of you that there is a donation bowl over on the counter next to Buddha and behind the frog. Or in front of the frog Buddha there. Buddha. And we encourage you to contribute to that, because we share that contribution with our speakers to further their work, as well as to help maintain this space so that we can continue to have these events here. And furthermore, I just want to thank you for coming out and joining us at this first event of 2012, and encourage you to come back again, both when we're having events and when you can come and look at books, statues, and other things.
Drink tea.
And tea tastings as well, which are a lot of fun, by the way. So thank you so much for coming tonight.
Good. And I do have a mailing list and flyers for this upcoming series. If you'd like to be apprised of Labyrinth pilgrimages and other events, please sign up.
Your website is pretty great, too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, I'll put my cards out. So